Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy.
So we have a special segment today. We are talking with Lilith Dorsey. Lilith's tradition focuses traditionally on plant science, anthropology, and film at URI, NYU, and University of London. And their magical training includes initiations in Lukumi, Haitian voodoo, and New Orleans voodoo. Lilith Dorsey is also a voodoo priestess and has been doing magic since 1991 for patrons and a filmmaker of the documentary Bodies of Water, Voodoo and Identity and Transformation. Lilith also was a choreographer and performer for Dr. John's Night Tripper Voodoo Show, and they are a proud published Black author of Voodoo and Afro-Caribbean Paganism, Orishas, Goddesses, Voodoo Queens, Water Magic, and soon to be released, Tarot Every Which Way. So hi, Lilith, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Tanya?
Doing real good. It's nice to have you on after multiple just like issues on both ends of technology out to get us.
Yeah, always. It's a dirty beastie, but we're here. Yay.
So you have a new book coming out, Tarot Every Which Way. And tarot is not my primary source of divination. So I always love to hear people talk about it because I'm always coming from a place of curiosity and interest in that realm. And I think we see a lot of tarot books out there because I think it is a pretty popular and accessible form of divination for people. So a lot of people have thoughts on it and opinions, and you can study it for ages. So can you tell us a little bit about your book and your approach to tarot?
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading tarot for, almost 40 years now. I thought about that yesterday. I was like, wow, that's longer than probably some people watching have been alive. But I really just wanted to have a book that was accessible for everybody. Like you said, not everybody reads tarot, but, you know, there's a lot of witches out there, and they all have their own unique practices. And I wanted to put together a book that would sort of allow those practices in conjunction with tarot. So like if you're a kitchen witch, there's recipes for each card, and that way you can better understand it. Maybe you keep getting, you know, judgment or something, and you're like, WTF, like, I don't know what's up with this card. So let me make this food, let me meditate on it, let me think about it, really internalize it and understand how it exists on a deeper level. So that was the idea. So there's stuff in there for every kind of witch. It really started out in the beginning because I was doing a reading for somebody who had a physically and mentally challenged child, and they were getting violent and lashing out. And I was like, huh, this person is not going to understand, oh, this is what this card means. But again, they might understand this musical note, or they might understand these plants, and having those around might help to calm them down, to give, you know, the mom clarity. And it really worked. And I was like, hey, this could work for everybody, not just this, you know, parent and child that were having difficulties, but anybody that might be having difficulties understanding the tarot and what it really is trying to say to them.
And that's really nice, because I think because tarot is a relatively traditional form of divination, I think sometimes when we see things that have been around for a really long time, it's like, well, here is the book, here is how it's done, and this is how, you know, it, like, you do it. But as someone personally who has edited a few books on tarot, like, you don't know what's going to click for different people. You don't know what wording is going to make sense. You know, like for me personally, I was, you know, working on this one book, and the moment they started talking about tarot in terms of structure, I was like, oh, now it makes sense. Now I get it. And I think everyone is so different. And so I really like that it's that you're coming from a really practical place of like, let's take something you already understand so that you can understand tarot maybe a little easier.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I think it's really nice, again, to say, oh, I'm comfortable with crystals, but now I know this crystal also is associated with this card, so I can put that card with the crystal. I can use that in my rituals for whatever I'm trying to bring about. So it really is a comprehensive, every which way, you know, to get the title in there, approach to what you're doing with the tarot and what you're doing with your own magic and your own practices, you know.
So as someone who, because you said you've been reading tarot for how many years?
40 years now. Yeah.
Gosh. So you must have like some of the best stories in the whole world. Do you have like any one reading you did that like just sticks with you?
I do. You know, like I was doing daily tarot readings and things like that, because I think that's always a good practice for people to get into when they're learning the cards and just trying to figure out how their day is going to go. And I got the Two of Cups, and the Two of Cups for me always is like a marriage proposal. I just know that for me, when that shows up, it's going to be a marriage proposal. But I was like, who's going to propose? And I was living in New York and I was on the subway and I got a seat on the subway, which is a miracle in and of itself. And this, you know, these buskers came on singing. It was like a jazz group of middle-aged black men. And in the middle of the song, he gets down on one knee and proposes to me, you know, obviously trying to get me to make a donation. But I thought, this is hilarious. These cards got jokes, right? Like, I did get a proposal today from some weirdo guy on the subway who wanted $5, but I gave him some money, but it was hilarious. It was just like, okay, Two of Cups is yet indeed meaning a proposal again, but in this strange and bizarre way that, you know, wasn't what I expected, but it still came to pass. So that's the one I love the most. I even put that one in the book. I was like, okay, this is what's happening here today. Yeah.
I love that. I read Lenormand, which is a different system, but sometimes I feel the cards will do something like that. Like, it's just proving to you that it knows what it's doing.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. You know, and when you're reading for other people too, you know, you might see that and be like, oh, you're going to propose. And the, you know, the client will run out and be like, oh my gosh, he's going to propose to me. But it might manifest in this different, strange, and possibly hopefully humorous way that's going to make through their day. You know, I remember getting the Two of Cups for a friend of mine, and she did get proposed to, and then he broke up with her the day after, you know. So just because this is what the cards are saying doesn't mean it's going to play out how you want it to. You know what I mean? I think a lot of times we hang our hopes on one right outcome as opposed to what's the best thing for me in the situation. And that's really how I try and get people to focus on when they're looking for information from the tarot.
And it looks like you also connect the cards with like crystals, herbs, animals, astrology, musical notes. So it really encompasses quite a few different realms in which people can best connect with the deck or the tarot.
Yeah, and there's rituals in there too, you know, like candle things and oils and spells and stuff, you know. So there's lots of different ways that people can connect. Maybe candle magic isn't their thing, but they love water magic, so they can take a bath for the Empress and connect with that divine feminine energy. Or maybe they're having a hard time, you know, struggling at school, so it would be better for them to do a charm bag. Or they love the garden, so they can plant these herbs in the garden and then use those when they're reading or when it comes up in, you know, a spread or something for them. So there's lots of different ways, you know. It really just allows people to use whatever their strengths are, or maybe they want to learn more about plants, so they'll go and plant these things in their garden and see what does really well and see what struggles and see what gets eaten by bugs. I'm all about organic gardening. So, you know, oh, okay, the land and the bugs here are really hungry for this, you know, marjoram or basil or something. What does that mean for me? What does that mean for me in terms of both the cards and my magic and how it's going to play out?
So I'm sure a lot of people ask you, because, you know, we always have new people coming to witchcraft. And I think when you're new to witchcraft, you really just want to jump right in. Like I always say, like when we were all 12, we immediately went to the spell section of the first witchcraft book we ever got. Like you just want to dive right in. So for people who do, who like are curious about tarot, but maybe they've always been a little unsure or a little insecure, or it felt really daunting, is there like this kind of one tip that you always say, okay, start with this first?
Yeah, I have a lot of stuff in there for beginning witches. You know, I don't want to call them baby witches because every day we're all learning something. I mean, like I said, I've been doing this for 40 years and there's always something new I can discover about the cards. But I think the best advice really is to keep some kind of journal or, you know, if you don't want to do it in an actual book, do it on your phone or something. You know, okay, I picked this card for today. This is how it played out. Because ultimately it's going to be how these things relate to you personally. You know, yes, it's good to know what the traditional meanings are, you know, but I really think that it's how you connect to the cards and how you see that particular card manifesting in your own life. So I had a friend, he was such a Capricorn, he's no longer with us, but he would write down every reading for, you know, 30 years. He had absolutely every reading he'd done for himself or someone else. So that way he could go back and he could see, oh, okay, I got this card this time and this is how it played out. I got it the next time and this is how it played out. So over time, he could put that together and say that here's the range of things that this card can mean and here's how it's going to play out in the physical world in these different situations. And I think that that's one of the things that annoys me about a lot of witchcraft books today. It's, you know, people will do one spell for themselves or one reading for themselves and decide that applies to everybody. But for me, it's like food. Some people are going to love a certain food. Some people are going to have an allergic reaction and end up in the hospital. So, you know, the same thing is not going to work for everybody. So we have to see it in a variety of situations. Does it work different on men, on women, on transgender people, on young people, on old people? How does it work across the board? And what's the different manifestations of that in our magic? And I think that's one of the things that you don't necessarily know when you're starting out, but you can work on that for yourself and build up that information and that knowledge.
That is such a great point, because even if you read the same system, I only ever met one other person who read the same system I do primarily. I think some people play with it, but it's not their primary. And I only met one other person. So me and him would do this thing where we would pull cards, and for Lenormand, you pull 36 at a time. So we'd pull 36 and we would both stare at it. And we would get the same result, but in different ways. It's like, wow, we went in different avenues to get there. And kind of like what you said, right? Like, it's different for everyone. How you make the connections is different. Mm-hmm. And how you're like, I really view it like you, when you form a relationship with a deck, your deck learns you and learns what cards to show you to get you the message it wants to get you. Do you have any advice for listeners about like forming relationships with your cards?
Yeah, I think my best advice has always been to put your deck under your pillow and sleep with it. See what your dreams are. You know what I mean? You're getting close to it. It's there. We spend the most time of out of our day in bed, you know, 6 to 8 hours. So we're there for the longest time. And being close to your cards at that time, I think, is really helpful. The other thing I always recommend is when you get a new deck, to sit down with it at breakfast time, make it a cup of coffee or tea, whatever you have, make it a little meal, sit there, have a conversation, introduce yourself to it, because this is a new thing. And then what I like to do is take a little tiny piece of that food and a little tiny piece of my hair and keep that in a jar. And that's the sacred energy of those cards. So then if my deck gets worn out and I replace it, then I already have that little spell bottle with all my energy of those cards in it, and I can introduce that to the next deck. So for me, it's really about treating it like an entity or a spiritual being, in a sense, that I'm having a connection with, that I'm opening this connection and welcoming it into my life and allowing it to tell me what it needs to tell me. Not necessarily what it wants to tell me or what I want to hear, but what I need to hear in that moment in order to be the most effective self.
I love that practice, because that you just explained with the hair in the jar and like, you know, creating this spirit, because I definitely saw your like voodoo expertise there in terms of like, in terms of, you know, spirit. I love that, like, you know, spirit creation. But you actually touched on something one of our listeners had a question about. And this is our listener, Rachel. She said, what do you do with a tarot deck that has two damaged cards? Do you retire it, throw it away? Like, what would you maybe suggest to someone who has a damaged deck?
If it's really to the point where you can't read with it anymore, you know, I've had decks where, you know, I could tell from the other side that this was this card, which is damaging when you're picking, right? You're like, oh, I know what that card is. I'm either going to pick it or not pick it because I know exactly what it is. So usually in that situation, if they're too damaged to read with, I'll retire them. I usually put them, you know, sometimes I'll put them around the house. Sometimes I'll like make art projects with it or a vision board where, okay, this is a card I'm trying to focus on or bring this energy into my life. So let me do a vision board out of that. And then I'll get a new deck and bless the new deck. But my cards are pretty raw. I mean, I'm old school. So I love this idea of getting gifted a deck, you know, even to the point where sometimes I'll give people money and be like, okay, I'm gifting you money, but you're going to go and buy a deck for me and gift me this deck, you know, sort of a workaround, right? So I don't have to buy my own deck. Somebody else actually bought it for me, you know. So, but yeah, my deck is pretty worn, but I will read with it until I can't read with it anymore and then replace it.
So I'm going to ask a very tough question, and I know it's like picking children, but do you have a favorite card?
Oh, I mean, I'm always partial to the High Priestess card. I was in the Tarot of the Burrows by George Courtney and Courtney Weber as the High Priestess. So that was a lot of fun. You know, they asked me to be in the deck and I was like, I want to be the High Priestess. So, but I always liked that. I just like that connection to the sacred feminine, how it goes back, you know, throughout time, representing Lilith and Demeter and all these other goddesses, I think, can be seen in that card. So I really like that card. I'm also in, I think she's calling it the Melanade Stan tarot deck, and I'm the Hierophant, which completely makes sense to me too, because I'm always telling people, do things traditionally, like it's okay to read the book, but that after you know everything that's in the book, then throw it away. I think that you have gaps in your knowledge if you don't know the traditional meanings of things, you know, and I know I get in trouble with a lot of intuitive witches, but to me, it kind of, I bring it back to cooking, right? Like I can go in the kitchen and intuit what I'm going to use. But if I don't know the difference between salt and sugar and flour, nobody's really going to want to eat what I'm cooking.
I honestly agree with you.
Yeah,
I really do agree with you. It's newer, but it is like a witch newsletter that goes out, and there's always like a little bit of a hot take in there. Mm-hmm. And the hot take for March was, you know, sometimes it's not all intention.
Yep.
You know, sometimes there is like history and roots, and the roots matter, and the culture matters, and the history matters. It's not just about how you feel 100% of the time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not discounting intuition at all, but if you know that somebody's used this herb for hundreds and hundreds of years to produce this thing, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. You know, your first go-to can be, oh, should I use this herb that's been used for 100 or 200 years for bringing about love or money or joy? You know, maybe it does work. It's worked for all these other people. So let me at least try that. You know, I do a lot of readings and spell work where I will have all the herbs that I have, the hundreds of them out, and go with the dowsing rods or the pendulum to see specifically what this person needs. But even if you have 100 herbs, you don't have 1,000 herbs at your disposal. And why should you, you know, oh, okay, it's supposed to be Dittany of Crete. Maybe I can't find Dittany of Crete anywhere. So what are the substitutions for that? What are the traditional things for that that might be able to be used in this circumstance?
So I just looked it up. If anyone wants to see Lilith as the High Priestess, if you Google Tarot of the Burrows and go to tarotgarden.com, you're the first picture.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I was like, I know I saw you post it on Facebook, but I was like, I want to see if I can find it.
Yeah. It's great. It's out of print, unfortunately. Oh, she did a show, I think, at the Smithsonian or something, but now it's out of print, unfortunately. But that was a lot of fun. It's funny, I'm doing a reading in that card, and I'm using the New Orleans Voodoo Tarot by Sally Ann Glassman and Louis Martinet. Louis has been my priest for almost 30 years, and Sally Ann and I are very close. We've been working on the National Voodoo Day celebration here in New Orleans. So it's funny to me that I use that deck all the time, and I'm actually friends with them, and I'm here in New Orleans now, because when I bought it, I think I was living in New England, and I was like, this is great, I love New Orleans, and this is a great deck, you know. But that's the one I read with most often.
Sometimes I think that is such the purest representation or like manifestation of magic. Is I think a lot of witches have that moment like that, right, where mm-hmm. you kind of see something full circle. And you know, you were saying that you were like, oh, New Orleans is so cool, and now you get to be in New Orleans and you get to be friends with the people you looked up to, and that yes. really is magic. Like,
it is magic. You know, I'd like to say it was all a coincidence or something, but the more I do magic, the more I realize there are no coincidences. You know, to be able to work with two people I respect is invaluable to me, and to be able to be part of their spiritual tradition is something I never would have dreamed. But here I am, so I'm happy about it.
So my last question about your book is, and I love to ask this question to authors, is, because like we all know the editing process and the publishing process. So is there anything that didn't make it into the book that you kind of wish had?
Well, part of this, there's a lot of interviews in my book, and part of them comes from a divination series I did on my blog, Voodoo Universe. It's called Divination Space Station. But I had interviewed so many people, Dorothy Morrison, Matt Oren, and I had kind of wanted those to go in a book in a separate chapter. Like, here's all the advice from the professionals, the big authors, the, you know, people who are, again, people look up to, you know, and they had said I could include it, but not in a separate chapter. So actually their advice is now sprinkled throughout the book, which I'm happy it's there. And I'm happy people can, you know, see these people that they've, you know, worked with or read some of their works and things like that. But I still think it would have been better in just one chapter. But that's, who am I? I'm just the writer. Like,
it's so funny, because as an editor and a publisher, I have had to make that choice. Or that decision of like, okay, is this going to be its own part, or do we need to insert it? And it's just so dependent, I guess, on what's going on at that moment. But yeah, I completely understand that, because you're like, yeah. Oh, this was so good and so fun. And it's just kind of now like weaved in instead of showcased.
Yeah. I mean, and my point was like, that's how I would want to have it. You know what I mean? Like, just even as a reader, I would have wanted to have, oh, here's all these famous people's advice in one spot, as opposed to now it's like, oh, this is what they said about picking a question. This is what they said about choosing a spread. This is what they said about the tarot book. Like, now you kind of have to hunt it down and find it, where it's more difficult that way, I just think. But as many people don't know, that the writer has some say, but not as much as they would like. I think that's the nice way to say it.
That's very true.
Yeah.
So you also have a YouTube show called Pop a Culture Show, which, yes, let me tell you, everyone listening knows I talk about Charmed and Buffy way too much. So I love this. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. It's Pop a Culture Show. We've been doing it, I think, for 2 years now. We have two seasons. Just speaking on Buffy, my co-host, Jason Winslade, he has his doctorate in performance studies, but he taught a class on Buffy and the Whedonverse for years at DePaul. And so we're big Buffy fans. But it was really, the first season was sort of classic. We dealt with things like Witches of Eastwick and The Wizard of Oz. But since we kind of had the reboot, we took a break for a while and came back. Now we're doing the weird stuff. We did Hodorowsky. And since, you know, it's St. Patrick's Day yesterday, we did Darby O'Gill and the Little People with Dr. Jenny Butler from Ireland. So, you know, we're doing the stranger things out there, which is really in both of our wheelhouses because we're weirdos. And it's not just, I mean, we're both academics, but we're also both practitioners, and we've been in the witchy pagan community for decades. So I think we bring a unique take on it, and we try and get either other scholars or other practitioners. We did one on The Exorcist, and my friend who was a consultant on Exorcist believer, Marcia Felia, she's, again, a professor dealing with witchcraft and things like that, but she was also the consultant on the movie. So that was great to be able to have that kind of insight into what was really happening when they do make these, you know, big Hollywood films and stuff like that about witches.
Oh, I absolutely love that. That is that is such a little perfect, like, nerd intersection for me of like film and academia and witchcraft. That's like chef's kiss. That's like absolutely perfect. Is there like a show or a movie that you haven't gotten to yet that like you're really excited to talk about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was thinking the one I was going to do next was like Water for Chocolate. You know, I mean, you hear me talking about recipes and cooking, and I just love that whole kind of magic of cooking. I try and focus on things that are, you know, BIPOC, things that don't get as much attention. So to be able to do this classic Mexican literature that then got translated into film and really is accessible to people, I think, you know. My co-host was like, well, I think it's just like Chocolat. I was like, yeah, in the same way that France is just like Mexico, dude.
Like not really, though.
No.
You're like,
no. There's a big difference. Part of our show is banter, you know, so that's, I think that's why people are tuning in, really, because we make fun of each other. It's great. But yeah, so that's the one I really wanted to do, because again, I think that's more accessible. We've done some of the classics that I love, like Eve's Bayou and things like that, and we're going to do Dune next too. So there's a lot of things that we both still want to get to.
It's really funny. For Water Like Chocolate, when I was in my early 20s, I worked at a library, and there was just like these 2 days where I was just being like bombarded with this book. So like I would see it on someone's desk, and then I would be shelving and I would put it away, or I'd be checking in book, or like it was just, I kept seeing it over and over and over again. I was like, how many copies of this book is in the library system? So I go to look, and like 4 copies in the entire Tampa, Hillsborough County. And I was like, I am being like bombarded with this book. So I was like, I must read it, obviously. And yeah, it's a really beautiful book. And I think there's a movie about it, correct? I don't think I ever saw it.
Yes. It's a really good adaptation too. You know, I think sometimes you see these adaptations and it doesn't live up to the book, but it really, it's a beautiful film. And it also really, I think the scriptwriter has the poetry that they have in the actual story, which I also miss a lot of times in adaptations. So I'm excited to do that.
My very white girl version for Water Like Chocolate, Simply Irresistible. That movie is why I think time travel exists, because I was like, the fact there's a movie about a kitchen witch and Buffy's in it and it's set in Bendel's, which is like my favorite store in the world. I was like, there's no way that like I didn't time travel and finance this whole movie. I'm also sure it is made for me and I'm the only one who likes it.
I love that. That's fantastic. We'll have to do that. We'll have you on as a guest. It'll be great.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Don't even get me started. I love that movie. But yeah, like, like everyone compares it to, you know, For Water Like Chocolate. I'm like, I don't think you can, but, cause For Water Like Chocolate is such a thing. But yeah, I love that. That is such my realm of love. So that is really fun. I can't wait to like do a binge and, catch up on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great.
So that's all the questions I have for you. Is there anything we didn't touch on that you want to share with our listeners?
Let's see. I don't know.
Well, your book, Tarot Every Which Way, comes out on June 8th of this year, and Silver Ravenwolf did the foreword, which is super cool. She's extremely nice.
I love Silver. I was so happy. I mean, again, like I said, I wanted to include Matt Oren and Dorothy Morrison and all these other people that were sort of iconic witches in the community. And I was thinking about, oh, who's going to do the foreword? And then I was like, oh, Silver. I love Silver and Silver loves me. This is perfect, you know, because so many people grew up reading her books and still read her books now. And she's just such a lovely person and so kind. And it was such an honor to have her do the foreword. And again, most people don't know, as a writer, getting someone to do the foreword is not as easy as you would think. It's kind of like, oh, would you like a whole bunch of extra work that's due really soon? Yeah, she agreed. And that was lovely. That was lovely.
Yeah, she's really, I think, nostalgic for a lot of people too. A lot of people, at least, you know, in my age group, we see her and we think of like childhood a little bit. Yes. Or your first ever book, or the only book at the library, or so that is really special. That's really neat.
Yeah. No, like I said, that was important to me to have all those people in there. Deborah Lipp's in the book too. I think, again, a lot of people started out by reading Deb's work and stuff like that. And I just did a foreword for her. But again, I just wanted it to be this sort of comprehensive thing. So I mentioned me and the Hierophant. So, you know, I think tradition is important. And those of us who were witches, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it was difficult. And you really had to mean it. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to be a witch today. It was like, oh, you know, I'm going to have people say bad things about me and maybe try and take my children away and all these things. There was such negativity surrounded by, you know, the whole topic of witchcraft, and for me especially, you know, the ATRs and voodoo and things like that. So anybody who was publicly out 30, 40 years ago meant they had, you know, male, female, trans, they had big balls. That's what was happening. So I really respect that, and I wanted to salute that in the book.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking about that today. I saw a TikTok, and like the vibe was there, but the information was a little not super accurate, but they were talking about different terms, and one of the terms that was brought up was like white magic or white witch. And I was telling a friend, I was like, you have to understand that like in the 60s and 70s that term kind of had to be created because people had to get the mainstream a little bit more on their side in terms of their practice, or their kids are going to be taken away by CPS. Yeah. So it wasn't like trying to rag on like folk magic or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just saying like, oh, we're not the witches from the Bible who were slaughtering babies. We're good witches, or white magic. It was really like a survival thing so their kids weren't snatched up, you know? Yeah. Sometimes I feel like we got like, I agree. It's much different today.
Yes, it is. It is. You know, I thought it would get more popular, but I never really thought it would go to this length. So I'm happy about that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, just as like a little witchy teenager, I was being saved at sleepovers and stuff. Like, times have changed.
They have. Thank the goddess. You know, it's funny, my daughter, I'm not going to say how old she is because we both stopped counting when she was 25, but when she was in college, one of her anthropology professors came up to her with my book and was like, is this your mom? And I was like, that's amazing to me. You know what I mean? That she could actually have that. And that's why I started writing, because there was so much negativity about the divine feminine and about voodoo and everything. And I didn't want her to grow up in a world where the only information she had was this misogynistic, what do I say, pale, stale, and male information about, you know, that was history, not her story, that was written by these people who don't understand what we're doing, you know. And it was really a beautiful moment for me to sort of come full circle and know that she could be in college and her professor could be showing her my book, you know.
That really is so special.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. I've always really loved you and supported your work. And so it was really nice to have you on and chat, which I can't believe it took this long.
I know. I was like, yay, we could talk again.
I really appreciate it. And I'm going to have a link to your link tree in the episode description. So anyone curious about your website, your book, your pop a culture show, they can easily find it. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. This was wonderful. I love you too. And I'm so happy we got to do this. And anybody who messages me, I've got free stickers. So just let me know if you want free stickers. You can find all my info on the link tree, get a hold of me, and I'll send you some stickers.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.